the Success is Subjective podcast series brought to you by ParentTrainers.com, presented by Lilly Consulting. I'm your host, Joanna Lilly. In today's episode, I had the pleasure of interviewing Dr. Claire Chase. Dr. Chase is the creator of the Resilience Thinking Method and founder of the Resilience by Design Consulting LLC. Claire specializes in helping people and teams make better decisions. In her work as a researcher of human interaction and decision-making, Claire studies how we can process information more effectively in order to build our resilience. She is also the co-host of the Meet the Moment podcast and author of the Resilience Reader, where she shares research insights on how we can effectively deal with the copious amounts of information we consume and improve our decision-making. Let's not wait any longer. Here's Dr. Chase. All right, Claire, thanks for being on the podcast.
Thank you so much for having me. This is so fun.
I'm so excited that, I get to know you. And this is going to be really interesting to me because a mutual friend connected us who is a good friend. And I'm very excited to ask you these questions, but just get to know you today. So yeah. Let's dive in. Why don't you actually tell the listeners, where did you grow up and what were the expectations that you were hearing from your family, as well as that immediate larger community in which you were raised? What is post-secondary education and the expectations around that?
So I was raised in a small town in Southern Illinois called Greenville, Illinois, and it is a rural community, but it also has a small liberal arts college in it. And my dad was a college professor. And so that's why we were there. So I didn't have any other family around. But we were very much embedded in that small town, but also college culture. And so my dad had his MFA in painting. And so he taught art history. He was the chair of the department. And so I knew a lot about secondary education from a very young age. In fact, I remember my family was were dorm parents for this women's dorm at this college whenever I was a baby. So I was always on the campus. It was kind of my playground in a way. I was always in the art building, at the library, really like using the gym. And so it felt like, you know, the next step was just naturally going to be college. And it was really just a matter of where. And I think I felt like at a really young age that even I would be doing more than an undergraduate degree. There was I thought I was going to be a lawyer. There's always like something else, some other part of it that I knew that there wasn't necessarily another choice, I would say, to not go to college because it was just such a huge part of our life.
Yeah. I mean, as you're talking, I'm thinking like you, of course, naturally, it makes sense. You were raised in higher education.
Right.
Wow. Okay. So then, you know, fast forward to Claire circa, you know, 17, senior year in high school. What were you looking for? And then where did you go?
Because I was raised in a small town and my sister is an artist too. So she is a choreographer and dancer and educator. And she's also 6 years older. So she had gone to the large state university, University of Illinois in the state. And I, at that time, and she had already graduated and then was starting to think about the next steps. She was actually teaching at a college and whenever I was going to college. And so I had a lot of, you know, I think it was, you know, a little anxiety, a little fear. I knew I wanted to go somewhere else just because that was also really ingrained in me to when we would go on vacation, we would go to cities. My mom worked in St. Louis, which was an hour away. We were always in the city. So I always thought that I would go just somewhere else. I didn't necessarily see myself there at the college that was in my hometown. And actually, my dad had moved to another college in St. Paul, Minnesota. And I felt a little bit in between. Like I didn't necessarily see myself at the college in my hometown. I didn't see myself at my dad's new college. I didn't know it very well. Might as well just go to that big state school. And so that's what I did. I went to University of Illinois in Urbana-Champaign. And And it's kind of funny because I always thought, well, it'd be a really easy place to transfer out of whenever I figure it out. Uh-huh. This will just be like a holding pattern, which is kind of a weird way of thinking about it now. But it felt like the cheapest option, despite the fact that I could have gotten free tuition because my dad was a professor. And it kind of just satisfied like something bigger, even though, again, it's the middle of cornfield, but it's a bigger place than, you know, where I grew up. And also I picked political science because I was like in student government. I loved thinking about like about community and leadership. And I was, again, thought I was going to law school. So it just felt right. Even though I had really no idea what I was doing. And I remember I chose to, I only applied to three places for college. I chose on the last possible day which one I was going to go to. And so then I got like this terrible dorm assignment. So it's like, I was like really procrastinating because I really just didn't know. And I think sometimes when we have no idea, like we don't have a clear direction, then it's harder to make a choice. I mean, that seems so obvious now, but in the moment I was like floundering. I felt like I was floundering. Like I better just go with what's going to make the most sense for the most possible paths I could take.
So it sounded like you kind of, because you were floundering, you dragged your feet, you were alluding to, you got assigned a not so great residence hall situation. Mm-hmm. So I'm just kind of curious, did that play a role then in your immediate, first semester, first year experience? And then what happened?
Yeah, I think that it was a lonely experience. It was like a lonely first year experience because then you don't, like, the choices are made for you. And I think that's what I was trying to do by procrastinating, was to say like, well, I guess I just have to choose this. And then, you know, I can blame that instead of my own admitting that I don't know what I want. And that I'm scared. And so I went and I met people, I met some great friends. That first year would definitely, like, I remember even going my sophomore year, my mom was driving me back to school. It was about 2 hours from where I grew up. And I turned to her and I was like, Mom, what if I don't want to do this? Like, what if this isn't the right thing? Like, I don't know if I really want to go back. And she was like, okay. I think she was a little surprised because, you know, obviously we had the whole summer and I'd never expressed this, but it was that kind of like trepidation I was feeling just on the drive back. The second year ended up being amazing and I found my people and still had no idea what I was doing in terms of academics, but when you're in liberal arts and sciences, you can kind of explore different majors and take different classes. And all of those things felt like fun. Like there weren't just like a set number of things I had to do. I wasn't in engineering. I wasn't a pre-med. Like when you're pre-law, you're like basically just take whatever classes you want. You just need to gain critical thinking skills. And so that's really the approach that I took. It was a little more exploratory than direction-filled. So then I didn't necessarily get any clarity into what I was going to do next, but it felt more fulfilling at least.
Well, and you said too, like even though you had trepidation driving up back to campus your second year, you ended up actually, like, because you met your people, that sense of belonging mm-hmm. allows for that safety and security to then turn around and say, okay, I can be curious, right? Like I can take classes, I can have fun, I can explore because I feel like I have that safe container. So I'm curious then if next, like moving forward, here you are, did you end up going to law school? Like what happened?
So what I ended up doing, which is a little bit of a repeat event through my life, is that whenever I don't know what I want, I will procrastinate on it. So I did have this awesome internship with the Pierce County Department of Assigned Counsel. So it's basically the public defender's office in Tacoma, Washington. And I loved it. I was the investigative intern. I did a lot of interviewing and research, which is actually foreshadows the work that I did, I do now, and I've done for the last 12 years. And but then whenever I got back, I postponed the LSAT three times, and I just didn't want to take it. I finally took it, and I felt like miserable the whole time. And no one likes taking tests, but it just felt like this isn't it. And in fact, I even toured law schools out in California. My mom and I went out and just, we went to a couple of different options. Like I was wanting to go out to California and practice and learn law. And I just, and none of it felt right. It all felt so forced. And so I remember that being like the first time to be like, this isn't it. And so worried about disappointment from my parents, because I had been talking about becoming a lawyer, becoming a judge since I, you know, was like probably in fourth grade. So, you know, I'm 11 and I'm talking about this dream. And then all of a sudden at 22, I'm like, this sounds miserable. And what I liked most about that internship was doing the research and meeting people and talking to people and connecting and collaborating. And whenever I shadowed the lawyers, that didn't seem that, I know it's not supposed to be fun, but it just didn't seem to connect with who I am and what my skill set are.
Or like vision of what you, how you viewed yourself as right. a lawyer, you know? Right. So that makes sense.
Yeah. So, yeah. So then after graduation, it definitely felt a little bit like floundering. But I ended up finding a job in branding. So I worked at a branding agency for about a year and a half. And I feel so fortunate for that experience because it was really research focused. And that just solidified my love of research, of talking to people, of doing qualitative interviews and focus groups, of analyzing data and just this revelation and this discovery that you find whenever there's like this amazing insight that can change the way that you've thought about something. I mean, that to me is like, it's creativity, it's exploration. So yeah, that started my path in research, really. Actually, I was working in that branding agency at 22.
Wow. And then you said, you know, you said it earlier, you've been researching for the last 12 years. So share with the listeners, like what, like, where are you doing the research? What are you researching, or what have you researched, just to kind of catch us up to speed on kind of that journey through very clearly your professional progression post-graduation?
Yeah. So again, when I went into that, that role at a branding agency, I was actually, so I was 22. So it was actually 15, 16 years ago. But I was so like, it was so serendipitous. I remember being just in a, like not knowing the next step, having no idea. I was applying for all types of jobs. But what it clued me in on is that, you know, we can like the asking questions process is really interesting. So then I decided, okay, I really want to just focus in on research. So I work in higher education. So I actually started at St. Louis University. I was worked in student support for 4 years and was able to get my master's degree there. And even while I was working in student support, it was always about, okay, well, what's working with students? Like, how do we get them to become more engaged in their work through experience? And so it was always like this, again, the same kind of self-discovery, but also doing academic research on community and how to instill a sense of community through online platforms. And so like that's what like kind of sparked my interest in and just like the world around me and how some things are just clicking and other things are just a lot harder. And we always want to cultivate that easy pathway of innovation or creativity. And so that really started on like pretty early on to say that there is something that's happening that we can, you know, align to and really change the world around us and our societies, our communities, our work environments to the future states that we want them to be in.
Yeah, research is so important. I'm like secretly geeking out as you're talking because I'm like, yes, all of it, especially related to student success or student support in higher education, because that continues to be such an interesting place. You are listening to the Success is Subjective podcast, and I'm your host, Joanna Lilly. As a reminder, if you've missed any past episodes, you can catch them on Apple Podcasts. My guest today is Dr. Claire Chase. So are you still doing research in higher education, and what are you doing?
So I am no longer working in higher education. I still do research, though. So the beautiful thing about where we are in today's world is that high quality research can now live outside of academic realms. And so I actually just ended my contract with CU Boulder or in higher education in December. And so it's kind of a fun new world, but, you know, bringing a lot of these insights on a different plane. I can't say that it's larger or it's just a more public forum. And sometimes when you do research in higher education, it stays kind of within your academic community. And my findings from my research were, I felt so powerful that I really needed to take them outside of that and to focus on more public scholarship. So right now I'm a writer, I'm a public speaker, and I am the founder of Resilience by Design. So it's research, it's organizational consulting and management. And so management consulting. So it's really fun work. It's like the best parts of it. It's like, I get to take the research and the insights and apply them right away. And that's what it's a crazy path. I never thought of myself, and now I'm like an entrepreneur, right? Like I'm self-employed. Those are things I never would have imagined for myself, you know, 15 years ago. I didn't start off thinking that this was the dream, but looking back, it was always these little crumbs of, you like writing, you love research, you feel comfortable public speaking, and you get energy from it because you're connecting, you're sharing something that's important. And I think that for a long time I ignored those passions because, you know, of X, Y, or Z. I wanted to achieve or a PhD, or I wanted to have a really cool job in downtown Chicago. But it's so fulfilling now to even those touchstones, those paths you walk along the way, all informed where I am today and kind of the knowledge or the confidence to know, like, this is the right thing. And again, like, things change, and maybe tomorrow, maybe 5 years down the road, it will be different. But every experience you have teaches you something. And sometimes it's a great, you know, energizing thing, and sometimes it can be crushing. But it opens up a different pathway for you. So.
Well, and I'm so excited that you are where you are too, right? Like you said, here's all these breadcrumbs that were kind of dropped along the way. You may or may not have picked them up or paid attention to them, but here you are now doing what you do and what you love. And it's just such an exciting place. And I also appreciate you just kind of highlighting, like, yeah, in 5 years, maybe I'll be doing something different. I don't know. And that's the beauty about life being such a winding road, and rather than this like straight line from A to B, because I think that stigma still exists. But I'm going to ask you this question because I ask everybody, do you see yourself as successful?
You know, this is a really hard question for me. And I think that on paper, I think I'm successful on paper. I mean, I can't deny I have my PhD. I've had some great work experiences. I, you know, have a beautiful family. Like, those all feel like ways that maybe at 21 I would have measured success. But in this moment, I'm still in this process of becoming, and I know I'm not there yet. And so it feels like, and it's probably my personality, that for me, success is the constant transformation. It's growth, but it's growth with action. So it's constant learning coupled with action and designing, you know, that next step, and thinking about what, you know, if it's the right one, does it align with the things that I value? And so I really see myself as this process of becoming, that success feels so definitive. And whenever you're constantly changing, it's hard to then say, oh, I've reached this, because I also don't know if that's a point now that I'm talking about it out loud. Like, I really think it is just about us constantly moving and growing and changing and transforming. And it actually makes me think about resilience, which is the work that I do and the research that I do, that oftentimes we think of resilience as this characteristic that is achievable. And the reality is that we can be moving towards resilience. But to reach resilience is, especially from a systems perspective, would be the death of the system. And we wouldn't want that. We want to keep moving. And that's why I see resilience as a process, as a pathway. And I think that of success in the same way, that it's about, you know, moving towards, you know, not towards one specific thing, But such a great question. I just think it's all about becoming. It's truly about becoming.
And what I love about asking this question is that it's equally terrifying to respond as it is exciting, and because it is so interpretive to our values, like our sense of self and vision and goals and all of that. And so there's no wrong answer, right? Mm-hmm. It's just like totally how you view it. So I actually think that I think I'm going to let that marinate, like what you just said, the sense of becoming, because that, I need to sit with that for a little bit. Mm-hmm. I like that. If you could give one piece of advice, then kind of transitioning to a young person, right? Like 18, 19 year old Claire, who's driving back to campus with trepidation and questioning her path, or anything in between, obviously. What piece of advice would you give that young adult?
You know, I was thinking about this question. I wrote down something that my grandma, I call her Nana, told me at this time in my life, at that time in my life. You know, I hadn't kind of figured it out. I didn't know where I was going. And she's like, well, I'm not worried. And I was like, oh, that's good. I mean, it gave me feel confident. Like, I just figured, well, since I didn't know what I was doing, everyone else must just be worried, you know? And I think I carried the weight of other people. And I think that that's what I wish that I would have known, is to say, all anyone wants of you is happy. Like, are you fulfilled? Are you happy? Are you figuring it out? Are you learning? And each thing that we do tells us something about the world around us. And so it is ultimately about learning. And to me, I feel a huge sense of like creating change and not letting things be stagnant, not letting things, not being complicit to, you know, terrible things happening in our society, oppression and happening around the world, that we have to use our voices. And so to me, like, just to say, there's a lot ahead of you, but be confident in that this is where you're supposed to be right now. And it's not going to always feel good, but that's part of the learning process.
And you're right too, in that, well, I always feel like our elders are giving us advice in the moment. And sometimes we have to like stop and think like, wait, what? I always think of worrying like somebody sitting in a rocking chair. It's like you're moving. You can move really fast or you can slow it down, but like you're not going anywhere, right? It's just like you're kind of spinning your wheels. And so I think that's actually a really good, that's almost like a dual purpose piece of advice, in the sense of like it relates to the young adult who is, you know, kind of at that place where they might be believing or carrying that weight that other people are concerned about where they are. And at the same time, I think that advice needs to be heard by a lot of parents who maybe are worrying or kind of vocal about their young adult not being on the trajectory that the parent believes that they need to be on, because that's just not how life goes.
It's so true. Because what does your worry say about what you believe about that person? Are you not like confident in their ability to take care of themselves, like, or figure it out? Or, and you know, oftentimes, you know, I have young kids that we want to do things for our kids, and I'm very guilty of being overcome with worry and anxiety, but what's been helping me recently is actually that exact thing, is to say people survive. And you know what? These are things that help them build character. And this is an opportunity, like, and I think that that's like great for young adults. Also good for, I think you said, a parent of a young adult and a parent of a, you know, 5-year-old.
Yeah. We should all be listening to this. Oh, this is great. So how can people get in connection or connect with you? I'm thinking like all contacts or like you said, your website and whatnot. So just rattle those off for us.
Sure. So my website is resiliencebydesign.net. And then the Instagram handle is also resilience.by.design. And those are great places just for content. I have a blog. You can sign up for my newsletter. So you can learn about upcoming events. You can get my musings via email about resilience. And it's just, I try to take a more curious look at the world around us and kind of think through the things that are happening from a resilience thinking perspective. I'm also the co-host of Meet the Moment podcast. And my co-host is Hannah Drain Taylor. And we just dive deep into conversations about various topics. Right now, we're kind of exploring what it means to be in our bodies and be in community. And yeah, it's so exciting. I do some workshops and would love to have anyone listening to join me and just dive into what is resilience thinking? What is the resilience thinking method? And how can we engage it in our everyday lives? I'd love to connect.
Perfect. And we'll make sure we have all of those links. We're driving people towards you.
Oh, right? Thank you.
You heard Claire's story straight from the source. So obviously now is the time for you to follow up and connect. Claire, thanks again for being on the podcast. This is a real honor just to speak with you, sit down with you, hear your story, and kind of just really chat about this young adult journey. So thank you again for taking the time.
Thank you so much for having me. This was so fun. It's hard to look back sometimes. And sometimes you look back and you're like, oh, all these things lined up. But the reality is in all those dots along the way was like fear, anxiety, uncertainty. So thanks so much for having me and for asking and diving in deeper to these things. I truly appreciate the opportunity.
Great. Thanks.
That's it for this week's Success is Subjective episode. Stay tuned for our next episode, where you can bet it'll be another amazing human sharing their very personal story with the world. You can follow me, Joanna, on Instagram at Lily Consulting and on Facebook at Lily Consulting LLC. Most importantly, though, check out the resources link on my website at lilyconsulting.com. And that's LILLEY consulting.com. Or you can just search on Google for Lily Consulting. You can also download and subscribe to listen to the Success is Subjective interviews on any popular podcast app, such as Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, iHeartRadio, SoundCloud, Spotify, Stitcher, and TuneIn Radio. Make sure you check out the show notes, where you'll find contact information, website details, links to articles, and all social media for our guest. Once again, thank you to ParentTrainers.com for sponsoring this podcast series. And thank you, our listener, for tuning in. And remember, there is no single path through life. Success is what you make it.